I'm Elizabeth Ames, and this is the Women in Product podcast. This episode is part of our series about the path to Chief Product Officer. It is one of 9 interviews we conducted with incredible women CPOs about their individual paths to Chief Product Officer. In this episode, Rashmi Ramesh interviews Alex Hardiman, Chief Product Officer of the New York Times. Alex was previously the Chief Business and Product Officer at The Atlantic. Prior to that, she was Product Director, Head of News Products at Facebook. Rashmi is a member of the Women in Product community and currently a Director of Product. I'll let Rashmi and Alex take it from here.
Thank you so much, Alex, for your time today, and welcome to Women in Product. I'm sure some of the insights that you provide is going to probably help a lot of the senior women just like myself who are thinking about their next steps. So let's get started. And to begin with, how did you get started in product management? And at what point did you actually think you wanted to be a chief product officer?
Well, thanks. I just want to start by saying thank you so much for having me. Women in Product has been such an important community for me, and also just so many of the other product managers at the New York Times. And so it's a real privilege to get to talk to you and kind of share thoughts about all of this. So in terms of my story and how I got started in product, what I'll say is that in my heart of hearts, the one thing I've always known is that I am a builder and I like to make things and things that solve real world problems and have the potential to really drive impact at scale. But just to be totally honest and humble, when I started my career 20 years ago, I had never even heard of product management. And so I think, like a lot of product managers over the last couple of decades, kind of found my way there serendipitously. And my first job was actually in marketing in the beauty industry. And what I found very early on was that my happy place in kind of the life cycle of development of beauty products was out in New Jersey at the R&D lab, where we were just doing a ton of work around consumer research and prototyping and validation of consumer needs. And I remember thinking, like, this is the thing. I don't even know what to call it yet. But like, if I could do more of this and think about applying that in a bit of a different industry that I felt more personally connected to, like, that's the thing I want to do. I still didn't know quite how to name it. And so what I did next was I shifted over into the journalism industry, and I come from a family of journalists, and the New York Times was just a company that I felt such kind of deep personal connection to. It had just played a real role in my own life when I was growing up, both on the West Coast, and then I went to school in New York. And my first job, because I'd come from a marketing background, was in product marketing and actually in the advertising department. And I loved it, but my job was basically to figure out how to bring new ad sponsorships to life around editorial products that the product teams in the newsroom were building. And this is going back to like 2006 when we were introducing the concept of a web blog. I mean, we're really going back to the early days of digital journalism. Yep. And again, I just remember looking at what the product team was doing, and I was like, aha, that's what I call the work that I want to do. And so I shifted pretty quickly from product marketing over into a junior product role working on the real estate vertical. And as I've gotten to know a lot more people kind of in senior product positions over the years, you kind of find that that's a pretty common path going from kind of marketing or product marketing into product. But I wish I had had the foresight to say, like, it's a clear trajectory and I know what I want, but I kind of found it just based on the elements of the work that I really found joy in. And so when I finally moved into a product role at the New York Times, again, I didn't even know that chief product officer was a role. It wasn't a role that existed at the Times, but I was just struck working on different product challenges by how interesting and energizing and challenging each opportunity was. And it just felt like, a career that I could do for a long time. So I fell into it, you know, kind of accidentally, but really just by following the things that I was joyful and passionate about.
Well, that's amazing. And in this journey, probably one of your pivots has been from marketing to really liking what a product person does and moving into product management. Were there any other detours or pivots that you took in order for you to get to a chief product officer position?
Many. Yeah. And I think maybe what I can do too, just to level set, is I would say that, so I've been in product, the product management field for about 15 years. And I would say that my career has had sort of three major chapters. The first chapter was being at the New York Times for about 10 years. And it was a moment of pretty dramatic transformation for the company. I would say the two real standout things that I really helped lead and was able to be a part of was first, the shift from print to mobile. When I first joined the New York Times, it was still a very print first organization known for the product being the newspaper. And then, you know, in 2008, we really started to dabble with, as everyone was, kind of this idea of, you know, meeting consumers where they are, not only having a mobile website, but also really thinking about reshaping journalism for apps. I mean, the 2G iPhone came out in 2008, along with the App Store, and it was this moment of like incredible opportunity. And so I spent a lot of time helping the organization pivot from being print first to really mobile first in all facets of new journalism we were creating, new product and features, and also just our monetization model, which was jointly subscriptions and advertising. And then the second really big pivot around the New York Times kind of transformation was really this shift to subscriptions. If you really, now I think everyone kind of assumes that it's pretty normal to have direct-to-consumer subscriptions for high-quality journalism. But back in 2011, when we started testing the concept of a subscription model, there wasn't really product market fit. A lot of people thought journalism was commodity, no one would pay for it. And so we spent a long time kind of focused on those two things, pivot to mobile and really help prove that quality journalism is worth paying for. And then after 10 years, I decided to shift out of media. I went to Facebook. And moving into big tech was a really great experience. And I can talk a little bit more about that later on. But I wanted to get experience outside of traditional media. And I wanted to work at a company that was really product-led from the founder on down. Mm-hmm. And so that chapter, I spent time really on different problems focused on building commerce products for small businesses in India and APAC who were coming online for the first time and really transacting through social commerce. It was an extraordinary experience. Then the 2016 election happened. As has been very well reported, there was just a ton of issues and a ton of kind of reckoning happening internally within the company and externally around misinformation and election integrity and the value of high quality news. And so I pivoted over to lead the news team for a few years over at Facebook. And then after that, I remember thinking, like, I've learned so much at Facebook. How do I bring that back into the third chapter of my career, which is bringing that sense of just craft and expertise and skill and ambition back to the mission of journalism. And so went to The Atlantic for a bit to relaunch their consumer business and then came back to The New York Times in 2019, right before the pandemic. And so I would say like somewhere in the intersection of tech and media is kind of my happy place when it comes to being in product. But it definitely was, you know, I took some pretty big turns. And what I'll say is I think in hindsight, a lot of the different pivots in my product career have shared a couple of different themes or characteristics, which I couldn't have named at the time. This is sort of where hindsight's 2020, but I think it's important for product leaders to really understand what they are most personally motivated by. And for me, it became clear that scale of impact was just so important. And so a lot of the problems that I would try to go after to solve were in this space of things that hadn't really been solved before, like figuring out a market for paid journalism or trying to like reestablish the idea of trusted quality news on a big tech platform. I think another one for me has always been around there needs to be like a sense of purpose and timeliness. Like for me, I personally love when things are high stakes and there's a certain amount of kind of urgency. And so for me, that is where, you know, focusing on, you know, helping the New York Times through a period like the pandemic is like right in my wheelhouse is something that I find to be appealing. But I've also learned that if I work on problems that I don't care about as much, if I'm a little bit too distant, I don't perform as well. And I think that in hindsight is what happened when I was focused on like in the beauty industry, starting off, I was 22 years old, and the product that I was working on was this very elegant luxury face cream for women who were 70 plus. Mm-hmm. And I remember just kind of having a hard time, like really connecting with the needs, which again is like what I think of as, you know, one of my own gaps. But what I've learned to do is kind of use that gap as a helpful constraint on my career and kind of figuring out, you know, what aligns with my own superpowers and strengths. And I can hopefully kind of find a little bit more of that connection. And then the only other thing that I'll say is I think been a key part of the journey for me is just really focusing on range. And I mean, like by range, I mean range of experience and just the idea of really focusing on continuous learning. And I do think that having range has been one of the single most important qualities that I've seen in my own success, but also in the success of other really fantastic CPOs. And range means multiple things. It means range of experience overseeing different product lines like consumer and B2B. It means working in a range of industries. So for me, you know, that's been media and also tech, but there are so many other industries that really need incredible product leadership. And I also think range of company size is quite important. What I was able to learn at a place like Facebook, where, you know, the scope of the news team was pretty small compared to some of the other portfolios within Facebook, but the impact of just news at Facebook, we were reaching over 2 billion people every day. And so there's a certain amount of experience and skill that comes with being in that type of context compared to when I was at The Atlantic, much smaller company, much smaller scale, but I was able to oversee, you know, half the business and, you know, learn a bunch of different things by overseeing a P&L, 5 or 6 different functions. And so I do think that type of range is, and that versatility, those are the types of experiences that I've personally found to be so helpful in terms of kind of figuring out how to get to CPO with it.
Oh, that's amazing. Thank you so much. I think there is so much of double click we can have across everything sure. you mentioned. It totally made sense with the way you described, you know, how each of the pivots led you to the kind of the next chapter and how you actually embarked on them. One question before we kind of move on to, you know, the preparation to actually become a chief product officer. One thing I would love to understand is, I know when you came back to Times, New York Times, the second time, you went from leading the products to actually a chief product officer. Was that something that you seeked to do, or is it something that you were also looking outside of New York Times to do, or how did that opportunity happen?
Yeah, it's a great question. So when I first left the Times, I left on really happy terms. I loved my role, but I remember thinking that if I did want to be the chief product officer of the New York Times or a place like the New York Times, I would be so much better at my job if I had just a range of experience outside of the company. Because I think many people have probably been in this position in their career where you might be at a place for a long time. I had been at the New York Times for a decade. And I had this pretty big internal question that I was grappling with, which was I really good at navigating product challenges at the New York Times? Or was I actually a good product leader who could operate anywhere? And I really needed to answer that question for myself, because I felt like either way, if I could hopefully be in that latter camp where I, you know, knew how to do product really well at a high altitude in a range of contexts, it would only mean that if I were to ever come back to the New York Times, which I'd always hoped would be a possibility, that I would just be so much better at my job and bring so much more value to the New York Times. And so when I left, I still kept a bunch of really open conversations and dialogues and relationships, because so many of my work friendships were with people at the Times, and we stayed in touch. And what I'll say is, being away was one of the best decisions I did, because I just now I think have such better pattern recognition for different problems. I was also, I loved my time at Facebook and The Atlantic, just because the caliber of people I was working with. I mean, I just learned from such extraordinary people. And I remember again thinking to bring that back now and to come into the New York Times, I actually had more of an outside-in perspective, which I felt would be much, much more valuable to a company like The Times. And I remember looking at The Times from the outside in and thinking there's even more potential and more growth opportunity as I'm on the outside looking in than I think I saw when I was there originally, just because I've kind of had my, you know, I got out of my comfort zone.
Right.
I was able to be, you know, there was a good amount of, you know, skepticism when you join a place like Facebook and they're like, wow, you came from journalism. What's going on there? And like people just push you in really interesting ways. And I found that to be so exciting and so hard and so exhilarating. And it also just kind of reconfirmed how much belief I have in the potential and the impact and the importance of a place like the New York Times. And so I found it to be a very kind of helpful and healthy life cycle. And, you know, about 3.5 years outside of the Times, that was when my boss, who's now the CEO, you know, she and I just started talking about the potential of the company and the product suite and the idea of building up to this vision that we now have of being the essential subscription for any English speaker around the world who not only wants to understand the world, but wants to like deeply engage with it. And we got really excited talking about that. And, you know, it's a privilege to be able to interview with a company when you know the operating context so well, they know so much about you. I kind of joke that it sort of felt like therapy because I would be like, you know, do you still have that funny thing happening over there? And they would say, you know, do you still get triggered by that person or that thing? I'd be like, you know what? I have grown. We've all grown. Right. And so it was just such an intentional and for me, very happy way to return. And I feel very lucky and very privileged. But I really don't think I would be in this position if I hadn't had the chance to leave. I really do think that external experience has made me a much better product leader.
That's an amazing clarity there to, you know, step out and, you know, come back in and make it a better place. So thank you for that. Let's kind of talk about the preparation to actually become a chief product officer. What skills did you think do you actively seek to acquire over the course of time to get to a chief product officer? I know there are a couple of things that you mentioned about the outside in look and kind of being able to operate not just in New York Times, but anywhere per se. But are there anything else that you want to add from, you know, some of the skills that you had to acquire?
Definitely. And I think it's such a good question because when I was looking back at the experience I gained, in particular when I was gone from the New York Times, I had the opportunity to get new skills under my belt that I wouldn't have otherwise had the chance to do. And so there are a couple of things that I think that are really important. The first is being able to not just be a part of creating an ambitious vision and strategy, but actually being the person who is setting the agenda and then getting a full organization behind it. And so that I think is one of the single most important things that will kind of help ready you for being a chief product officer. And it takes a lot of tries. It takes a lot of energy and a lot of effort. And for me, being able to do that first within the context of news at Facebook, and then being able to do that in the context of the whole organization of The Atlantic, I think really was helpful in terms of setting me up to come back to the New York Times. And so I think that's one of them. A second thing that I think is really helpful is as a leader, really demonstrating how product-driven growth can deliver on really large business goals and targets. So much of what I find is, and we can talk about this later, the difference between just a head of product and a chief product officer is really understanding how the product investments and interventions are dramatically advancing the overarching business. And so that is a place where, you know, for me, I had a good amount of experience at the Times focusing on this through the lens of, say, mobile investment and, you know, really understanding the ROI of investing in mobile and looking at its impact on audience growth, engagement growth, consumer revenue, advertising revenue. Doing that at Facebook, you know, it was really helpful. I was overseeing consumer products and publishing products within news. And, you know, Instant Articles, for instance, was just a huge business. And so really understanding what it took to scale that business was great experience. And then by the time I got to The Atlantic, I was overseeing the entire consumer business P&L, which was also just a really kind of great set of experiences. So I think really understanding the connection between product investments and business goals and targets is a big one. Another one that I think is really useful is having the ability to lead functions beyond product. So when I was at Facebook, I was the product group lead for news, which meant that I got to oversee product and engineering, which was just such a fantastic experience and learning curve. When I was at Atlantic, I was overseeing the whole digital organization. So it included design, data science, marketing, customer care, and kind of other functions. And so really making sure that you know how to support functions across the board, enabling them to do their best work, advocating for them, understanding their craft, making sure that they have incredible leadership in place to help them thrive. That's a set of experiences that I've found to be incredibly useful. And then I would say the last one, the more time you have to interface with company leadership, board members, investors, especially in both private and publicly held companies, those are really different contexts. And so learning how to, you know, bring the right information in the room, influence the right outcomes, really make sure that, you know, the work that your team is doing is well understood and is driving the impact at the altitude and level that it should. I have found that that experience has also been invaluable in terms of the journey to CPO.
Got it. No, thank you. And kind of narrowing down my question, I know you touched upon this. Yeah. If a person or if people are, you know, let's say a step or two away from being a chief product officer, maybe they are like a VP position, what skills do you think at that point in their career should they actually acquire or tweak in order to get to the CPO position?
Yeah, if we're going to go, like, I think that's a great narrowing question. I would say, make sure that you have the chance to go from leading maybe one product line to multiple. Mm-hmm. I think that that expansion of scope really has demonstrated, it demonstrates how you're able to manage complexity and trade-offs. And I'll just say, you know, like in the context of the New York Times, you know, really managing a subscription business and an advertising business and a commerce and licensing business. I mean, these are things that can work harmoniously, and sometimes you've got to make some calls. And so understanding kind of how to manage that ambiguity and complexity is a part of the CPO job. And if you can do that as you expand your scope, I think that that is a really big one. I would say something we touched on a little bit, just being really clear about the direct causal impact of what your product is doing to drive the business forward is just such an important and helpful skill set. And then really learning how to work effectively with the leadership of your company, both the people above you, but also your peers around you. You know, who is your first team? And how do you make sure that you know, you all have the same shared reality and context about what's happening, the same shared goals, a real sense of trust, the ability to disagree openly, but in a very, you know, good intent and positive way. Those are all, you know, cultural elements that the more you can build up those skills and that experience, I think is really useful.
No, great examples. And so were there any other additional resources for learning or any other training that you took possibly that helped you with being a CPO?
I wish I had a really good example for this. I think the best training is really on the ground experience. I do think that nothing beats that. And so raising your hand, finding great opportunities where you see a gap in the business that could use incredible product thinking, like go for it. Just be really proactive. I have found that to be some of the most magical experience, a kind of unexpected experience. And then beyond that, I mean, what you're doing with Women in Product didn't exist, you know, when I was first getting going in my career, and I wish it did. But the network, the expertise, the allyship is incredible. And so I really do hope, I mean, the people listening to this podcast already know about Women in Product, but I do hope that others who don't, like, we can kind of really help spread the word, because this is there's an incredible amount of guidance and support and just brilliance in this group. And then the other thing is just, you know, be curious and ask for help and make friends. I really do find that even beyond formal communities and networking structures, so many of the best conversations happen when you find someone who you admire and you just say, "Hey, can I exchange some notes with you? Can I take you out for a cup of coffee?" I mean, so many people just, they feel so kind of humbled and excited to be like, "Oh, wow, you noticed that thing I built and you're interested in it, you care? That's so great. Let's chat." And so I would just like be really, really open and bullish, and then pay it back and pay it forward. There's so many people who I know have helped me just kind of think about things differently or helped with an introduction. And so I really try to take on that responsibility to help others too?
I think my simple answer for that learning or resources would be to just have a masterclass with all of you, all of you powerful women, and that gives us so much more there. And what do you think was the hardest or the biggest barrier to break in order to become a chief product officer, and why was it hard, and how did you overcome that?
Yeah, I think it's a good question. I think the hardest thing that just takes time, both for me to see it and I think to help others see it, is demonstrating my own leadership capacity beyond the product function. And so really not only doing the job of, say, taking on multiple products and business lines, overseeing multiple functions, but really demonstrating to myself and to the organization that you're kind of shifting from a head of a function to a real executive that can navigate really complicated situations, really complicated personalities and stakeholders. Again, everyone from your peers at the leadership level to board of directors to investors, you know, really making sure that, you know, I and others didn't box me into just the category of head of product. And I think that's a challenge that we all kind of face. And some of it stems from a little bit of, or maybe a lot of, imposter syndrome. You know, we all have our own, we're all on the continuum there, I think, or many of us are. And so just like really reminding yourself that I might not look like every other CPO that I've seen in the world, but I really have the skills, and clearly I've been given the opportunity to show that I can operate that level. And just really helping other people see you at that level. And it can take a little bit of time, but just showing up the way you want to be seen, and being unabashed about it, I think is one of the hardest and also one of the most rewarding things.
Got it. And was there any specific challenge that you faced as a female leader during your time to get to a CPO?
Of course. You know, I don't look like a lot of the chief product officers who had come before me. And there was actually never a chief product officer at the New York Times before me. And I know, you know, I'm sitting in a chair right now, but I'm only 5'2". I'm small in, you know, physical stature. I am 40 years old, but sometimes people think I'm younger and they sometimes just assume I'm less experienced. I remember earlier in my career, this happened multiple times where I was told that I didn't have the same gravitas, or I didn't look like I had the same executive presence as other male leaders. And so again, I worked hard to figure out what feedback I thought was fair and useful, what feedback I actually decided to ignore. Mm-hmm. And then I just worked hard to show up as the type of leader that I wanted to be, and really be a leader that I thought could be effective in the role and could help just demonstrate to other women in particular, a potential path for them to take. And one of the luxuries that I now have is that I can be very choosy about who I work for, both in terms of the company and the leader. Mm-hmm. And this is really important, and one of the main reasons why I came back to the New York Times. I came back because I wanted to work for my boss, who's the CEO, Meredith Copeland-Levien. And she has made it a real point to help me and other female leaders lean into our strengths and differences instead of asking us to show up as somebody else. And the New York Times leadership team now on the business side looks so much different than it did when I first joined back in 2006. Over half of the senior leadership team is made up of women. Mm-hmm. It is just a much more inclusive and welcoming and, I would say, even like more ambitious environment than it used to be. And that matters, and that counts for something. And I'm really kind of proud of what we've built up, and I've got a lot more work to do. But I do think that who you work for and the culture and the values of the company, it just matters so much. And so that's a place where we should all be more choosy and picky. And I was very lucky to have found an amazing person to work with and for, an amazing group of female leaders who are really like my first team, mm-hmm. And a company that has really prioritized that.
Oh, that's awesome. And you touched upon this with respect to some of the board approval and the board interaction and things. So how did you kind of learn to work with the board, and how was your first interaction with them been? And, you know, some tips around that.
Yeah, I think so. I was lucky enough to interface with the board in my first stint with the New York Times when I came back, one of the things that I noticed that I actually found to be really wonderful was that the board composition had changed a little bit in the sense that we actually have now a couple of chief product officers on the board. Mm-hmm. Like we have people who are really expert in not only the role of CPO, but in really understanding the value of product thinking and the value of investment in product and product-driven growth for the overarching business. And so for me, the relationship that I have with the board is really making sure that we are as accountable as possible to demonstrating why the investments we're making within the realm of kind of products are really driving growth for the business and returning shareholder value. And then what I also love is being able to ask this incredible group of people advice because they just have, you know, a range of experiences. We have board members who work at Roblox and Etsy and just all of these companies that are doing really extraordinary things and are kind of helping, you know, just make sure that we're, you know, leading the business as responsibly and ambitious as possible. And so I've found the board experience to be actually some of the most rewarding. And so much of it comes from, I think, kind of that give and take where, you know, not only do you have to show up as CPO to kind of do your job to make sure that they know that you're doing your job well, but it's a great moment just to say, can I get your take and your advice and really tap into their expertise and their networks and their relationships. And I feel like we've got a really exceptional board. And so I really try to make them or have them help us be better at what we're doing.
No, that's amazing. And I think one of the things that we probably everyone's curious about when you compare to tech company is, you know, building the product teams. And of course, at this level, you know, a team is everything. And what the team does really denotes your success as well. So how did you kind of, first of all, actually taking a step back, how are the product teams built from a New York Times perspective compared to, you know, any tech company per se? And how did you know to build the right teams and any learnings from, you know, from just having the right people in there?
Yeah, I am. It's been such a journey for the product team at the New York Times. Early on, the product team was really small and it was a group of generalists just because the product portfolio was so much smaller. Mm-hmm. But over time, I would say that, and I'll kind of describe our structure over time, we look a lot more like a tech company, I think, mm-hmm. than like a traditional news or journalism mm-hmm. organization. So the way that we're set up is that we have what we call our missions. And these missions are cross-functional teams. And it's a mix of, they're led by a general manager, a product leader. And it includes product managers, engineers, data scientists, designers, product marketers, mm-hmm. and in our case, journalists in many cases, just mm-hmm. because so much of what we're doing is trying to figure out how to, you know, make our journalism more accessible, more powerful, and more relevant to people's lives. And the missions that we have basically fall in three different categories. We have consumer missions. And so this could be a mission focused on our news product or our games product. Mm-hmm. And in games, for instance, they both make hit games like Spelling Bee, and they are also behind acquisitions like Wordle, which has been a very, very fun thing. Cooking, audio, Wirecutter, The Athletic, another acquisition. Those are all consumer teams that kind of are structured that way. Then we have monetization teams that are centralized, and we have two major ones. Our subscriber growth mission, and so they own all of the commercial assets across individual products and the bundle because we sell what we call kind of the essential subscription bundle. Mm-hmm. And they just have, whereas on the consumer side, you know, the product teams have really incredible judgment around identifying consumer needs and understanding how to build and validate that value at scale. They're really focused more on like audience and engagement metrics. On the monetization side, if you're working on the subscription side, you are obsessed with your subscription funnel. And so that's where we have built up, I would say, a product team that is much more oriented towards kind of the classic growth PM mindset. So they understand every step of their funnel intimately, and they are optimizing for every step of from conversion down to churn in a really extraordinary way. And then we have a digital advertising mission, which also similarly, you know, we have some incredible leaders and thinkers there who are obsessed and like really believe in the beauty of premium differentiated advertising that can live within a high quality subscriber experience and are doing there's a ton of innovation that's happening there. And so you have like the consumer PMs, you have the monetization PMs, and then we also have platform PMs. Mm-hmm. And this was something that up until about 4 years ago was not, I would say, a core PM strength of ours. But I brought in someone, really amazing leader from Google, actually, her name is Lisa Cam. And she came in to run the majority of our platform teams. And I really credit her with helping us bring a different specialized technical PM skill set into the company. It's just been transformational in terms of our ability to think about building the right platforms, systems, and infrastructure mm-hmm. that drives incredible efficiency and really works across all of our products mm-hmm. in a really elegant way. And so that's been the single biggest shift for us, is going from a small generalist group of PMs to being much more nuanced about valuing different mm-hmm. expertise. And we're also getting better, I think, about helping PMs kind of shift and grow in their skilling, so that mm-hmm. you might start off as a growth PM, but then over time you want to shift into more of a consumer role. And right. how do we build up those opportunities mm-hmm. so that you can do more of that? And so that means we're over 100 PMs now at the time. So we have like mm-hmm. a very large and diverse group of people and skills, which has been incredible. The other thing that's been really important for us in terms of building out a high functioning and successful product team has been the investment in product operations, mm-hmm. which is something that we didn't have. Everyone did a little bit of it, but a couple mm-hmm. of years ago, actually took one of my best product leaders, and she was just very passionate about product operations. And so she has helped build out so much of that infrastructure around career frameworks and skilling and community and experimentation best practices, and so much of the things that, again, when you hit a certain threshold in terms of scale of team, you need just to be able to unlock so much more impact mm-hmm. and so much more creativity among your teams. And so that has also been a thing that we didn't need up until a few years ago, but is really starting to make such a difference in terms of our team.
No, pretty amazing. I think it's coming from the tech world, as you said. It is very similar to tech, but there are so many other nuances in the product teams. It's pretty amazing. I'm sure we can absorb some of those ways of how you think about the solutions and how they are distributed in things within our own product teams, I think. Thank you for that. Taking a look at some of, translating your experiences, I know you touched upon a lot of them initially. So one question I had is, how did you kind of make these choices across those companies? Were you kind of prioritizing for certain things from translating your experiences per se?
I think, yeah, going back to, a couple of the themes that have kind of been constant for me when I've looked at new opportunities, I've really tried to figure out how I can somehow get better at my job and learn new things. And so if I think about, within the New York Times in my very first chapter, so of 10 years, what was really important for me was, even if I started off as a junior PM in real estate, I then started doing a lot within real estate in a mobile context, and then went to saying, okay, I would like to expand my scope to lead the whole mobile team. Mm. And then we got to a place where mobile was leading everything that we did. And so I started overseeing the entire news team. And so those are like really trying to figure out on the scope front, how to make sure that as you get better and better, you're adding a little bit more complexity and kind of new problem sets in, I think is that has been pretty important. And it's not scope for scope's sake. It's really scope because there's an incredible learning curve, and I have something that the business thinks I can bring to kind of help solve that problem. And so I do think that scope has been a really big thing. The other one for me, I think I touched on this a little bit, is just purpose. Mm. I have really kind of understood where I get joyful and excited. And also things where I'm like, oh, there's somebody else who could probably go solve that better than me. Mm-hmm. And so I think, just being really honest and comfortable with yourself about what motivates you and also what doesn't, because you might have a problem that needs solving, but you might be able to hire someone or find someone who's so much better at solving it. And that's an amazing thing if you can do that. So I think that has been a really big, I think, part for me about how I choose what I do, the companies and the role. And then leading into, we talked a little bit just about, you know, superpowers. I think really finding a place where I can just add value is really important for me. And so, you know, when I look at the things that I think I've been better at kind of over the course of my career, it's taking high level product strategy and connecting it to work on the ground to business results, you know, really knowing the customers, knowing the market we're in, knowing each unique business and how to, you know, pull all of that into a compelling strategy with objectives and a roadmap that teams can just go incredibly execute against. I think it's also, I've been in a lot of situations where leading strategic and cultural transformation is part of the job. Mm. And I love doing that. Mm. And then I think the other thing that I look for is when I can take on hard things. And in some cases, even if I don't have a lot of direct experience, and that can feel really uncomfortable. But I remember at the New York Times, for instance, right when I came back, our CTO left. And so we started a new search, but it took us over a year to find a new CTO. Mm-hmm. And so my boss was like, great, you're the interim CTO. I was like, okay, let's do this. And it was hard and incredible. I mean, I got to work with just some of the best, you know, engineering minds we have mm-hmm. at the company. And so being, you know, not just tolerating that discomfort, but actually seeking it out, I think has been really, really important as well.
Coming to now as a chief product officer, I know you touched upon this a little bit with respect to, you know, your responsibilities and how you look from a VP of product to this, but could you kind of elaborate a little bit more on your responsibilities as a chief product officer and anything else you want to add with respect to difference between, you know, you mentioned head of product or a VP of product to a chief product officer, anything that you want to add further?
Yeah, of course. So, and because I've had both roles, I can kind of get a little bit specific. Yeah. So I would say, you know, a great VP of product, which sometimes is interchanged with just head of product. That mm-hmm. was certainly the case at the Times and I think at right. other organizations. You need to be an amazing functional leader of product management. So you need to be really good at defining and implementing the processes that allow product managers to work smoothly. And I think we look for, at least what I've certainly seen and what I needed to do at the VP level was be a very well-rounded leader across the key dimensions of great product management. So product sense and strategy, product execution, mm-hmm. and leadership. And a lot of what this would look like day-to-day was around prioritization, like aligning teams around objectives that are downstream from the company's strategy, pulling together the roadmap across all product managers, setting ambitious and measurable goals, and then hitting them. A ton around just the functional elements of talent, right? Hiring, retaining, training, really great product managers, helping people up-level their craft. You know, there are some very hard skills about great product managers that you look for and like really making sure that you open up those opportunities. And then just also fostering a sense of community and learning. Those are a lot of the hallmarks that I was responsible for when I was a VP of product overseeing like just the news product at the New York Times. The shift to chief product officer, I think is a big one, and it's all about becoming an executive and taking on just a lot more scope. And so the big differences between VP of product and CPO for me have been, we talked about this a little bit, but interfacing with the board and, mm-hmm. and investors, not just taking an existing strategy, but actually creating a company strategy and product vision with input from leaders across the company, understanding the business and the company financials really, really deeply, so that you can create revenue projections off of your roadmaps and really understand the ROI of your investments. Really then like having to deeply understand how to get from roadmap to revenue and how to analyze those things and put them into perspective. My peer set is different. I am joined at the hip with our chief growth officer who oversees our day-to-day subscription numbers. At other companies, this might be the CFO. I'm also a very close partner to a lot of other executives across the company, our CTO, our chief data officer, our executive editor and other top editors, because, you know, we're at a news organization. Mm-hmm. And that really requires, I would say, a mix of art and science, because you're working with very, very creative leaders and very quantitative leaders and kind of knowing how to speak to both type of leaders, again, to rally them across a common view. And then, you know, back to this point of scope, you know, I oversee multiple business lines and product portfolios. So in my capacity right now, I oversee most of the consumer teams. I oversee our news product, cooking, games, audio. I also oversee our digital ad product mission. And then I oversee product and design as functions. And so it just, you know, going from overseeing just the function of product to kind of that type of scope gives me the capacity to kind of practice a lot of the things that I was just describing. So I do think it's a pretty meaningful step up. But again, when you are a functional head of product or a VP of product, you can really start to do some of those things. And so I would just really encourage, you know, anyone who wants to make that next leap, you've got a lot of power and influence as the functional head of product, and there's a lot that you can start to test and try and ask to do to get that experience.
Wow, you very clearly articulated that. Thank you so much. I think lots of nuggets in that few sentences you mentioned. And I know you spoke a bit about the CEO and things. So what do you think is the key to successfully working with your CEO, especially the first time, the first few years you were at New York Times, as you know, as fresh there, and CEO in particular, how about the rest of the leadership team at large? What's the key to working with all of them successfully?
Yeah, so I am. If we start with our CEO, I really can't say enough how lucky I feel that I get to work for her. Again, Meredith. And part of what makes our relationship, I think, really effective is that she really understands what an effective CPO does. And I think I just mentioned how even the composition of the board has changed a bit. You know, she's added chief product officers to our board, and she also sees really great chief product officers in action just by virtue of being on other boards herself. Like, she's on the board of Instacart. And so I feel like my primary job is that I don't need to explain what I do. What I need to do is understand what context she needs to manage the company, and in particular, you know, to manage our board of directors and kind of the street. And so we just stay in very close touch, because a lot of the information that I am working with day to day internally kind of needs to be reshaped and kind of up-leveled in a way that really helps her make the best decisions as the chief executive of the company. I would say with the rest of the leadership team, you know, we just talk a lot about being each other's first team. And I can't say enough about the importance of making sure that everybody has shared context and just the same reality. Like, everybody really needs to understand what's happening in the business. Do they believe in the same headwinds and tailwinds? What is happening with our collective talent and workforce and more? And so really feeling like you have a team of peers who are owning the whole with you. So like, if there's an engineering problem, that's my job as much as the CTO's job. I mean, that is a very, I think, important way to kind of set up that, that first team, because from there, it is so much easier to align goals, to build a really high trust culture where you feel like you have the permission to tackle really hard things together, where people are assuming good intent, and you can focus again, like, more on the work because the relationship and the ties are so strong. And it takes real investment. You have to put a ton of time into setting those relationships up and that culture up. But it pays off. I mean, it is an incredible feeling when you feel supported by your peers, and clearly they know you have their back. And so it's investment that is so worth it.
No, thank you. It's all I could say is just wow at some of the things that you've talked and the passion behind all of that. Could really see that through. And in this course of time, did you think you had to make any professional or personal sacrifice to become a chief product officer? And do you even think of it as a sacrifice per se?
I don't think of it as a sacrifice, but I do think that we all talk about balance, and it's just such a highly relative word. And
right,
I think it means
right.
very, very different things to different people. For me, achieving balance is about having a very fulfilling and ambitious career as CPO, and also having a really ambitious family and personal life. But it doesn't mean that I work 9 to 5. It doesn't mean that I have a lot of downtime. I have a very full life. It can be a little crazy, but it's my own choice, and it's a very deliberate choice. And I think right now, I'm 40 years old, and I've been through so many different personal and professional adventures that I feel much more in control kind of mm-hmm. of my time in my life, mm-hmm. but it didn't always feel that way. And I think it's important that we actually all talk about this. So I'm happy to share a story that I've shared in some other contexts. But when I first went over to Facebook, I had two young kids, 2.5 and a couple months old. And my husband got quite ill. And I remember having this moment of like, oh no, like, do I actually just need to stop working in order mm-hmm. to help care for him and the family? Or can I come up with something a little bit different? And we came up with a solution that is not normal. We just moved in his best friend, who was wonderful, who was like, you know what? Mm. I'm in a position in my life where I can come help care for him and help you parent. You're still present, but I was going to India and Europe and South America for my job. I mean, it was wild. And I remember thinking, like, this is not traditional. This is not normal, but it's working. And so just the idea of being okay having unconventional solutions that work for your life, I think is really important. Asking for help, it can be really hard. And so for me, the single best thing I did was reach out to family and friends and say, like, I want to be able to do both. I can't do it alone. Mm. Things are really tricky. And I was just so overwhelmed kind of by the amount of support. And I know that that's very lucky. Not everybody has that. But so all of it to say, if I describe my life now, our friend still lives with us, by the way, and it's amazing. Now we just have, my husband's feeling better. It's just this like very joyous household of family and friends. It sort of sounds like people sort of describe it to like a Showtime tragicomedy of some sort, which is probably right. Everyone has their own unique circumstances in life. And I hope we just all talk about it more because it's not straightforward. People need different things personally and professionally. And I hope that there are a lot more creative and kind of unorthodox solutions that in particular allow women to be in really big, bold, important jobs.
No, absolutely. Thank you so much for sharing that. And I'm so glad you did. Thinking of unconventional ways per se, right? So thank you for that. And maybe fast forward 5 years down the line, how do you think this chief product officer role will change, if you think it will change?
I mean, I can tell you a little bit about my hopes, which is I think the chief product officer role will just become a lot more common across even more companies and industries. It's just such, the best chief product officers that I've seen in action are so dynamic and so versatile in the skills that they bring. And I think that those skills can just provide so much value and impact in a lot of contexts where they don't yet live. So I just hope that so many more companies have CPOs at the top really helping to drive their businesses forward. I also think something that we're seeing, which is quite exciting, and you can just look at a lot of the women in product kind of founders. You look at Fiji Simo or Deblu, and this idea of the CPO role becoming more of a training ground for future CEOs is really incredible. And so I'm very encouraged by that. And then I just think, I hope that more people look to the CPO role as a very ambitious and purposeful career path, because I have truly found it to be that way. And I think it can appeal to a lot of people with a lot of different backgrounds and interests.
That's awesome. Thank you so much for your time.
It was great talking to you.
Rashmi, such a great conversation with Alex. For our next episode, I know that you're speaking with Anika Gupta, Chief Product Officer at Rubrik, a leader in cloud data security. One of the things that I love about this interview is how unabashedly ambitious Anika is and how so much of her career has been driven by curiosity and a learning mindset. Any tidbits from that interview that you'd like to share?
Yeah, I completely agree that she was so much driven by curiosity and she constantly reinvented herself whenever she felt stuck. But apart from that, I'm also amazed by her focus on mastering people management in order to build a world-class team.
So true. Hope you all will join us for the next episode to hear more. Thanks.
Thank you for listening. And thanks also to our partners, Discover, Google, Meta, and Upwork, who provide annual support for the work of Women in Product and our community. This podcast is an original production of Women in Product. Follow us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Leave us a review so that others can discover us. Or share this episode with people you know. If you have any questions or suggestions for future guests or topics, you can reach us at podcast@womenpm.org.